This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Patriots take Mac Jones in the first round of the NFL draft. Red Sox continue to roll. Bruins making their playoff push, and the Celtics just infuriating at times this year. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks so much for taking some time to be with us here on the Press Pass show. So let's start with this. I had a feeling going back to January that Mac Jones was going to end up with the Patriots. I watched him play against Notre Dame. I'd seen him before, but really intensely in that national semifinal. And you know, I saw a guy that seemed to fit with the way that Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick like to run an offense. There's a lot of timing patterns. There's a good offensive line, a team that runs the football, and there's always been a lot of commonality between what Nick Saban likes to do and what Bill Belichick likes to do. And you know, to me, the signing of Cam Newton signified that this was going to be the direction the Patriots were going to go. You look at Mac Jones, and he doesn't have the natural skill set or, you know, seems like a quarterback that is in the Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson type of realm where the NFL is going. But that being said, he has the skill set to be successful running a Tom Brady-type offense, and the Patriots have tremendous, tremendous skill around him, something that was missing, you know, last year and is going to be there for years to come. But this is Cam Newton's job. And we could talk all about Mac Jones. Cam Newton is the starting quarterback of the New England Patriots. That was my feel and has been my feel since the Patriots made that decision. Bill Belichick made that official on Thursday night.
Look forward to working with him. You know, he's a smart kid. He's been in a system that's, you know, similar to ours. We've had a lot of good conversations with him. I think he'll be able to process the offense. It's obviously going to take a lot of time. We'll see how it goes. You know, Cam's our quarterback. Whatever position, whatever time, Jared or Mac, you know, ready to, you know, challenge and compete, then we'll see how that goes.
Here is Mac Jones on being picked by the Pats.
Yeah, it was a really great experience just going through the whole draft process. And I got a chance to meet with, obviously, the Patriots on Zoom with Coach McDaniels and stuff. And, you know, we just talked football and went through some stuff. And, you know, from this point forward, now that I'm on a team, I'm really just looking forward to learning, you know, from him, from the other quarterbacks, and just coming in and do what I did at Alabama, just work hard and go from there.
All right, that is Mac Jones right there. It's just the Bruins now. Bruins, 7 games remaining, including today's contest here on Saturday against the Buffalo Sabres at 1 p.m. The Bruins looking to solidify playoff positioning. They're in good shape right now to make the playoffs. We're going to get into here with Bruce Cassidy and some of the other Bruins about whether or not positioning really even matters all that much this year in this current environment. But first, I want to look back at the game from Thursday night. Bruins' second strong performance in a row. They beat the Sabres 5-2 after beating the Penguins 3-1. Good in all three zones, and we're really starting to see the development of a great line with David Krejci as well as Taylor Hall and Craig Smith. Krejci had 2 points in the game against the Buffalo Sabres, power play goal, and a tremendous assist on a pass to Taylor Hall late in the contest. Also, Tuukka Rask is starting to really play as an elite netminder after dealing with some back issues. I talked with the Bruins head coach, Bruce Cassidy.
Hey, Bruce, on that Krejci play, you know, that line seemed to do everything you'd want them to do in that particular instance, with Smith winning a good puck battle at center ice and then the things developing from there. It seems that their play has been pretty consistent. In the short and long term, how significant is that? And did you feel this was Tuukka's best game since he was back as well?
Yeah, I guess to work backwards, I thought Tuukka was solid. I thought what game was it? He was really good Is it the Islanders game? Maybe one of his first ones back. Rock solid. Obviously good in Pittsburgh the other night. I thought he was obviously busier tonight. So he's starting to string some together, that's for sure. Anyway, I guess it's open to debate which one was the best one. But and then the Krejci line has been really good in their 200-foot game. A little slow starting, I thought, tonight. They didn't have it early on, but got going. And, yeah, it's. I think it was a one battle by Smitty. They lost a battle in the O-zone, worked their way back, get a second puck and, you know, make a play, and all of a sudden they're through the neutral zone. And I think since that line's been together, you'd have to correct me, but I don't know if they've been – I don't believe they've been scored on five-on-five goals. So, obviously, they're generating every night, backing teams off. Giving us, you know, a big offensive boost. Nice job in the power play tonight. You know, and they're, you know, accountable defensively. So what more can you ask for, right? So good for them.
I want to ask you a little about the division and your sense as to, you know, the quality of the division. Do you feel the top four teams are kind of interchangeable at this point in terms of you know, playing against one another? And also, is there a concern about Pittsburgh perhaps getting away a little bit from you guys if they get 2 points tomorrow night?
We're not concerned about Pittsburgh getting away. We're concerned about us mostly, Chris, first. We got to get to our game, play it well, you know, get the points. I think this year it's been a grind for a lot of the teams. Pittsburgh went through it to start. A lot of their D were out, et cetera. They're still missing Malkin, and then Kapanen was out. So they're just, you know, trying to find your game, and they have. Clearly they have, and they've separated a little bit. We started to find ours. We started to separate maybe from, you know, the teams behind us. It's just... and caught up a little bit. You know, the Islanders were way ahead, and now you can see them a little. So I just think our division is strong. I think there's four excellent teams right now. I think the Rangers are right there. We haven't seen them in a while, but they've got a good, young, talented team. Are they ready to play with the, you know, the top teams? I don't know. We'll see them next week, and I guess that'll be determined how they finish. But they're certainly playing well this time of the year. Philly obviously was a strong team that just had some issues there and it got away from them. So, at the end of the day, that's what I think about our division is that, you know, it's tough at the top. So for us, Pittsburgh getting away, I think you're going to find whoever the four teams are that get in, the one versus four and two versus three, it's going to be hard to pick a favorite, you know, unless someone, you know, just reels off 8, 9, 10 in a row before the playoffs start. And I guess you could say, hey, they'd have an advantage. But I think there's not a lot to choose between those top teams. And I think all those teams would agree. They've had different, you know, varied amounts of success against each team. You ask any coach GM from those, Washington, Pittsburgh, Donnie with us, the Islanders, that, you know, like I said, there's not a lot to choose from those four teams. So the seeding, I think, in our particular division, however it plays out this year for the four teams, is not going to be a big difference.
David Krejci, a power play goal and an assist for the Bees. Second game in a row where he has made a tremendous play just by slowing the game down and letting it come to him, making a tremendous play in this contest with a pass over to Taylor Hall, which was the Bruins' fourth goal.
Hey, David, take me through your mindset on plays like the fourth goal tonight, where players a lot of times want to, you know, speed up and, in those instances, they're not able to have the poise that you have. How are you able to do that in those instances?
You know what? There's nothing much to it. I knew Halsey was going to be there, and you know, things happen really quick on the ice, and I'm glad it worked out.
And it seems like you guys have a really good chemistry. You have a solid 200-foot game right now. What do you think has clicked with, you know, the three of you to make this work?
I think we're just taking it game by game. No matter if we had a good game or bad game, we're just kind of get ready and start from the beginning. And that's what's happening. You know, we keep our feet moving. And I think we've been pretty good on forecheck. So we got to keep doing that because we create lots of offense from our forecheck.
Charlie Coyle's goal ended up being the game winner, though. Coyle broke the longest goalless streak of his career. He had gone 28 games without scoring.
Hey, Charlie, your game-winning goal tonight, just, you know, the mindset in scoring that goal, getting to the net, and you mentioned that it wasn't weighing on you the time that you hadn't scored, but because certainly that must have been a bit of a release to be able to not just score, but to, you know, put a game winner in the back of the net.
Yeah, I always want to contribute. You want to contribute every game. That's what you want. But it's a team game, and it usually is kind of scattered throughout. And but it's, yeah, I'm happy to contribute. I am, and it's nice to see that go in, help my team, you know, win. And it's, yeah, I'm happy about it for sure. I'm not going to downplay that, but it's, I just got to keep doing what I set out to do and what I'm capable of, and that stuff will happen. And you know, sometimes you're not scoring and you got to bulldoze your way to the net. So that was kind of my mindset on that. And I got a lucky stick, and luckily it went in. So we'll take it and move on.
Yeah, this time of year, getting towards the postseason, that push, what is the mentality like? How does that shift for you guys?
We start to see it in some of these games, you know, whether it's Pittsburgh, you know, Wash, all the teams that are in playoff contention. You start to see that playoff type atmosphere within the games. You know, tight check in a 1-0 game yesterday. So it's good to prep for it and kind of get that mentality and the mindset and your game, your habits, square that away right now and kind of build that. So as we go into playoffs and we're in the real deal, we're ready to go. We've already seen it. We've already felt it and know how to play.
And for you as a three zone guy that puts such a point of emphasis on being that F3 and strong on the back check and all that, does that take away at times, do you think, from, you know, being a quote unquote scorer and getting to the net more consistently?
It can. It depends on the game. You know, it's my game, I want to be in there and I want to be in on the forecheck and doing my thing. And nothing says you can't do that if you're playing center. Of course you can. Maybe more times than not, you're playing F3 if you're the centerman, but you're kind of playing back more. But it's, you can make all the excuses you want. It's, you got to get in there, you got to find a way and make things happen and contribute for your team.
As the pride of Weymouth, Massachusetts, Charlie Coyle, right here on the Press Pass. Here's where things sit for the Bruins. They have two games in hand over the Rangers, who are behind them, and they play twice next week. Rangers only 5 games left on the season. Bruins lead the Rangers by 6 points. They have 64. They've played one fewer game than the Islanders. They trail them. They have 65 points. Pittsburgh has 69, as does Washington. Those two teams tied atop the division. Might be a bit of a jump for the Bruins to catch either Washington or Pittsburgh. Islanders certainly achievable, but the Bruins are in the playoffs right now, and I don't think it really matters. Those four teams are going to play each other, and any one of them could beat any of the others, though I do like the way Washington looks, and I like the way the Bruins are going into the postseason as well. Things have been going really well for the Boston Red Sox as well. They're coming off a 2-game sweep of the New York Mets, which included beating Jacob deGrom in a 1-0 contest down in New York. Red Sox looking good right now, but do they have that 2018 vibe? I talked with J.D. Martinez, Red Sox designated hitter, about that.
J.D., Christian Vasquez has said a couple times that this group has the same type of feel as the 2018 team in terms of how you talk the game and kind of the consistent approach in regards to, you know, baseball amongst each other. Do you get that feel as well? And what is that like when people are have that same mindset that you seem to have?
Yeah, I mean, some similarities. I mean, that 2018 was a special team. You know, that's a tough team to compete against. But this is a very good team. I feel like we have a good camaraderie with the guys. And there's always that, like, I don't know, I kind of measure, you know, like in 18, I always measured our games by, okay, when could we have won the game? You know, did we get that opportunity? Did that opportunity come? You know, and it was like every day in 2018, whether it was in the first inning or the fifth inning or the ninth inning, we always had that chance to win the game, you know, to really separate ourselves. And I feel like with this team, I feel those opportunities coming. You know, like, you know, last night we were in the game the whole day. The one before, we were in the game the whole time. Like every game this season, I feel like we've always had a chance, whether when we won or when we've lost, to really just have that one hit, that one play that really changes the game. And that's kind of how I measure, you know, our teams. And last year, I feel like we didn't have that. Last year, I feel like we were out of the game before the game, you know, as soon as the game started or in the third inning, I feel like we were kind of just playing catch up the whole time. This year, it feels a lot more in that aspect, like 2018.
Can this lineup be better than that group once the, you know, the winter, the summer months start to come about, weather heats up? Does this have that potential to be historically good?
I mean, I don't know, man. That's tough. We had a really, really good offense in 18. I mean, I think it was the best offense in baseball. But I think we have a really good offense now, too. You know, obviously, we have one of the best hitters, Mookie, not here, and that 18. But got other, you know, key players like, you know, Doogie and, you know, Kike coming in. So it's a lot of other pieces. You know, if Christian Arroyo swings it like he's been swinging, that's a big plus. You know, I think he's got a really good swing, and I think he can really impact this team. You know, Bogey and Devers, they're Bogey and Devers, you know, they're going to hit, I feel like. So, yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, I have confidence in our lineup. I've said that from the beginning, you know, even after we got swept by Baltimore. Like I always told you guys that. I was like, I like this lineup. I think we're going to be able to put some runs up. I think we're going to be in every game.
Matt Barnes has been an all-star caliber closer to start the year, and one of the biggest differences for him has been attacking hitters. He is getting strike one on a consistent basis. Hitters are only hitting 106 against him so far. He's only walked three. He has struck out 25 and getting six saves so far this year. I talked with Matt Barnes about what changed with him as he is now attacking hitters.
Matt, was there a particular moment where, you know, it all clicked in regards to this change in wanting to engage hitters and attack the strike zone more? Was it after the Varitek conversation? Did it need to be, you know, a bunch of different folks that told you? Did it click at a particular time?
Yeah, so one of the things that I guess prior to this year that I was very notorious for was the high fastball up at the neck that was completely uncompetitive. I think we can all probably agree on that. Really does nobody any good. It's not beneficial for me, doesn't do anything for the hitter. Like, so when I had like three or four outings left in spring training, I told Bush, I said, you know, when I get a high heater, I'm just going to pretend like I'm going to throw a middle. I'm just going to throw a fastball in the middle of the plate and see what happens. See where it ends up, how I'm working, right? Like, does that play? Does that get to where I want it to? And when I started having success seeing things like that, you kind of look at it and I'm like, okay, well, if I'm going to totally buy into this in spring training and like earn for the season, I need to try it in spring training, right? Let's see, does this actually pan out? Because if I go out there in a couple games in spring training and I get knocked around, who cares, right? So when I bought in and I was like, I'm getting swing and misses in the zone, or I'm getting bad contact, or guys are laid on balls. It was just more proof of concept that my fastball plays in the zone probably more than I thought it did. And when you look at it, like, I had this kind of misconception that a four-seam fastball was completely straight and true and never moved, right? Which is why I probably went to the curveball a lot more in situations where I was trying to play on non-damage, right? But when you look and you break down the vertical and the horizontal movement of the fastball, it's not straight. In fact, it probably moves as much as my curveball, just in a different direction. So when I accepted that and got off of this like historical idea of that a four-seamer is just completely true and straight, then I was able to understand how and why it played in the zone just as good as my curveball, which has allowed me to attack the zone more with the fastball, and subsequently allows me to get worse swings on both of those pitches out of the zone.
How did the experiment in 19, you're facing the best hitters in each lineup a couple times a series, play with you from a mental perspective as well in regards to maybe overthinking things and not wanting to attack the strike zone because of the quality of facing, you know, Judge or Trout or Bregman a couple times each series?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely difficult. And one of the things, you know, Workman and I had talked about that back in 19, and one of the things that he said to me really stood out, and I was like, man, that's so true. Like, if I face Mike Trout on a Friday night and I get Mike Trout out, I have to be better on Saturday to get him out because he just saw me now, right? Like, if I face him on Friday, he hasn't seen me, but, I mean, what, we play him six times, seven times a year? Like, he hasn't seen me yet. He sees me Friday. I got to be better on Saturday because he just saw me. And if I face him on Saturday, I got to face him again on Sunday. Like, so I mean, it's definitely difficult. It's obviously easier as a reliever if you don't have to face the same guys night in and night out. Like, Friday to Sundays may be a little bit different, right? But, you know, at the end of the day, it really comes down to, like, I've got a game plan of how I'm going to attack every single guy. I know exactly what I'm going to do. And I'm going to stick to my strengths over, you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to stick to my strengths and I'm going to attack the guys the way that I want to attack them. And in my mind, if I execute what I want to do, then it shouldn't matter. Now, obviously that doesn't, right? Because baseball is a funny game in which you can go out there and execute everything you want and you can still lose and you can still get hit. That's one of the beautifully frustrating things about this game. But to me, if I can go out there and I execute the game plan that I want to do, then you know what? Then it shouldn't matter.
Speaking of dominant pitching, Eduardo Rodriguez gets the ball today here on Saturday against the Rangers in Texas. He has been great for the Red Sox. 4 wins in 4 starts, including a win over the Mariners last Sunday.
Okay. Eduardo, AC twice referred to you as the ace of this staff. What does that mean, even though if you don't think of yourself in those terms, that he does? And do you feel you've established, you know, the credibility and the workload to be referred to as an ace?
I mean, coming from AC, you guys know we had a big relation together every time, you know what I mean? Every time he been pushed me. I think he commented because of that, because he been pushed me too much to get where the point where I at right now. You know what I mean? For me, I don't think I am. If you're thinking, I really appreciate it, you know, but like I say, for me, it's just like he been pushed me through all my career, through the years he been here, he been pushed me and to get to this point, and I really appreciate the way he called me and everything he been doing for me to get to this point, you know.
Your command and lack of walks obviously have been significant for you. And he points to, you know, 2018 World Series game 4 and also spring training game in 19 as being the change for you in regards to trusting your stuff and developing that command. Is that what you see as well? Or were there other points where you started to get where you want to be from a command, trusting your stuff perspective?
I will say, since 2018, and especially that World Series game that I went out there and do the best I can do, win the game, and we win the game. Thanks God, we win the game that day. I've been trying to do everything I can to have my command better and better and better. That game, I think, made me trust more of my staff, you know, because it wasn't the World Series, and I was pitching it to the sixth inning, you know, so that was a big jump by me that year. And after that, man, every time I go on the bullpen, every time I'm playing catch and all that, just thinking on throw the ball right where I want it. Throw it with confidence, because I think that's the thing that they've been helping me a lot. Every time I had a confidence on my pitches, change at quarter, I mean, curveball, whatever I throw, if I had confidence on it, something good is going to happen. And that's the way I think every time I throw a pitch. And that's what I think has been the big jump for me to go out there and throw 2 walks, 3 walks every start to just go out there and numb, you know.
Celtics continue to be a frustrating, inconsistent squad, to say the least. In my view, they are headed to the play-in tournament. They play Miami twice, both at home, but I feel that Miami is going to have success against the Celtics. Celtics just aren't there right now. They have so much difficulty putting it together this year, and I talked with Kemba Walker about that after their blowout loss against the Charlotte Hornets.
Hey, Kemba, just the frustration of having everybody back in the lineup tonight outside of Rob and did not obviously put things together the way you guys want. And, you know, as kind of the other guys are saying as well, this kind of keeps being a theme. I mean, at what point do you feel that there is going to be that substantive change for this group in regards to consistency?
Not sure.
These are certainly big moments for the Celtics down the course of this season. I've been impressed with Jason Tatum. I've been impressed with Jaylen Brown. Both are young superstars in this league. But there's still a lot of learning and maturation which is taking place. The frustration with the Celtics this year has been that they have not played like we have seen Brad Stevens' teams play like in the past. Consistently hard. That has been missing. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks for joining us for the Press Pass.
Hi, this is Chris Ryan, and this is the Press Pass. The Boston Celtics season, by all accounts, has been maddening because this is a team that has the potential to be really, really good. But the key word is potential, and they have never lived up to that this year. Anytime there has been positive signs, there have been steps backwards. And the Celtics looked like they were about to hit a new rock bottom in a season in which they have hit a number of rock bottoms. They were down by 29 points at the half on Friday night against the San Antonio Spurs. They showed no resistance and no interest in playing defense and allowing 75 points in the first half. And they trailed by as many as 32 in this game. Celtics had a choice to make at halftime, and they decided they were going to compete. They decided that they were going to give themselves a chance to win, and then they did it. They won 143-140 in overtime, and this is a game that's going to be remembered for a long time, not just because the Celtics came back, but because Jason Tatum dropped in 60 points. It was a remarkable performance by an individual who is becoming a remarkable player. Tatum tied Larry Bird for the most points in Celtics history with those 60 points. And this may be the moment. This may be the moment where the Celtics come to life and where a group that has tremendous potential finds that this year. Or this may be a season in which two potential superstars, and you can make the argument that Tatum is there already and Jaylen Brown is right on the doorstep, become those superstars, and the growth of facing adversity this year and emerging as leaders will help them immeasurably moving forward. That is all still to be determined, but we do know that this was a huge win for a Celtics team in which they were bound to lose and played a lifeless first half. They responded, and the Celtics played a tremendous game. It was Tatum's game, but it was really everybody contributing, and Tatum paid homage to that post-game.
I think the best part was obviously coming back and winning and just seeing everyone contribute, from obviously myself and JB, that big shotty at the end, and Smart all night, and Tristan on the glass, and Rob, but really, you know, like Aaron. Aaron came in and played unbelievable tonight. And I think that just kind of shows the growth of our team, just everybody contributing. Obviously down 30 points, and just figuring out a way to win the game.
But how about his night? Tying Larry Bird for the most points in Celtics history. Here is Jason Tatum on that.
It's hard to, I don't know. I mean, obviously that is, anytime you're mentioned, you know, with, you know, a top 10 player of all time, any stat, obviously that is a good thing. You know, something I never, I think, would have imagined at this age. You know, I just come out here and play the game that I love, and, you know, try to play at a high level. But I mean, once you kind of sit back, you know, after the game, or, you know, just think about what it means, you know, for your name to be up there. It's just us two, and all the players that came before you to put on this uniform. I mean, yes, yeah, it's a big deal, and I'm for sure grateful for the position that I'm in. You know, it's hard to put into words, but, you know, it's a surreal feeling.
Tatum shot 20 of 37, 5 of 7 from 3, and 15 of 17 from the free throw line. He did not turn the basketball over in this game and had 60 points, a remarkable output. Also remarkable for the Celtics in this game was Aaron Nesmith. He hustled. He made a huge contribution. He's one of the first guys off the bench. He was 7 of 9 from the floor, 2 of 3 from 3. He also had 6 rebounds for the Celtics, 16 points for Aaron Nesmith.
Hey, Aaron, can you talk a little bit about, you know, halftime? Jaylen just said you guys had a decision to make at halftime about whether you guys wanted to compete in this game and to come back and have a chance to do so or not. And what was that like, and how do you feel you played a role in that?
I mean, we were down big. You know, some teams you can throw in the towel and fold and, you know, just call it the game. But that's not what we wanted to do here. You know, we're fighting for, you know, something bigger down the road. So in order to get there, we had to win this game. So as a collective, we came together and we dug deep and we were able to pull this one out.
Rob Williams was big for the Celtics as well, 10 points and 9 rebounds. I talked with Rob also about closing out strong this season. Hey, Rob, just your personal focus, you know, down the stretch here, the regular season, and what do you feel like the team's, you know, collective focus is to finish here on a strong note?
Going back to what JB said a couple nights ago, just finding the inner fight in us. You know, we gotta find that dog. Even if we gotta break it out of each other, you know what I'm saying? It's not never, obviously.
Celtics played against the San Antonio Spurs, and as many of you know, I was privileged to spend a lot of time around the Spurs and Greg Popovich when Matt Bonner was playing there for a decade. And I have just so much respect for Coach Pop and think that what he has done in San Antonio is not only build one of the great franchises of all time, but he's built a culture and has changed how coaching can and should be done. You can demand that your players give their best. You can demand that they try to achieve their own greatness. But at the end of the day, it's just a sport and it's just a game. And he works to build relationships and to build quality human beings. Coach Pop is an extraordinary individual. And I asked and talked to Brad Stevens, Celtics head coach, about Coach Pop.
Hey, Brad, along those lines, what is your level of respect and appreciation for Greg Popovich and not just being, you know, one of the great coaches of all time, but what he has, you know, brought to the game on social justice issues and how he seems to care about people and the future of the sport?
Yeah, he's a great role model for coaches. He's a great leader. He's a great human being. He's a guy that you can reach out to and ask his advice. You obviously sit on every word that he says. I've done that several times over the last few years, and I don't know him great either, although we see each other occasionally, but he always answers and he always is willing to lend a hand. I think he's one of the great coaches in team sports of all time. And, you know, I think that it goes beyond just his knowledge of the game or his expertise in managing situations, but he's got a great way with his team, his people and his organization. And then obviously he's got terrific perspective. And I think he's able to share that perspective and lead. And I have nothing but great things to say about him, nothing but the utmost respect for him.
Was that the turning point that gets the Celtics playing the type of consistent basketball they'll need to play to go deep into the postseason? We shall see. But certainly a big night for the Boston Celtics with that win over the San Antonio Spurs, 143-140 in overtime. I am Chris Ryan. This is the Press Pass. Coming up next, we check in on the Bruins and Red Sox. It's going to be crunch time for the Boston Bruins. Only a handful of regular season games left. We're going to hear from some of them in just a moment here on the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks so much for taking some time to join us. Let's start off with a discussion about David Pastrnak. And Pastrnak last year was one of the best players in the National Hockey League. And with that comes a tremendous amount of attention. This year, he has had a number of setbacks, injury, COVID, performance, etc., and he has not been the same. Now, certainly the postseason is still there, and he has an opportunity to change things. And he has been good for the Bruins this year, but he has not been elite for the Bruins this year. And with great performance comes great expectation, obviously. And for Pastrnak this year, he's second on the Bruins in points with 43. That's good enough for a point per game, so still very solid there. 19 goals, 24 assists, but well off the pace set by Brad Marchand, who has 60 points, 27 goals in 47 contests this season. I talked with Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy about what he has seen from Pasta.
Hey, Butchie, I had a question about Pasta as well and just kind of what you've seen from him away from the areas that you hope are going to be his strengths, like you're talking about with getting the puck into the back of the nets, strong decisions, strong with the puck. What have you seen outside of that? And also, do you feel like he's getting more attention focused on him this year? And that's, you know, benefited Brad perhaps a little bit.
Well, he has gotten attention, and that line should get attention. I think always has, but they're a little more physical with him when the situation dictates. And that's, you know, part of being an elite player, right? You're going to get a little more attention. And he'll have to find a way to play through it to remain elite. That's, you know, the way it works. You see, we're going to watch a player number 87 tonight. He's been doing it for years. So Gensel's become that player a little more now for them, where it's like, hey, guys, when he gets in the slot, you got to make it hard on him. So you might not have said that, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. So that's a little bit where he's at and what goes along with being a great player. Marshy, I think, has dealt with it too for a while. Marshy's you know, as you know, is a dog on a bone. So the extra attention is not going to bother him. I think he relishes it, to be honest with you. But that's, you know, where David will have to find a way. As for the rest of his game, you know, pace maybe isn't there as much as some other years. Some of that is schedule. Some of that is, you know, his surgery maybe set him back a little bit to prepare to play this intensive a schedule, even though it was a while ago. Some of that conditioning goes in the bank in the summer, right? Before you play, or in this case, it would have been the fall, but he didn't have the proper lead up time. And so some of that, I think, you know, is, it could be some of the reasons he doesn't have that extra juice some days, and there's nothing you can do about that. He had an injury, had to get fixed. So play through it. And at the end of the day, I think he's been, you know, away from the puck. He does his job. He's a guy that we all know when we notice him, it's with the puck, it's attacking, it's shooting. I think the rest of his game's been fine. He just has to manage it a little better at times. But again, that's with the puck on his stick, when he can go, when he can't. And for the most part, like I said, he's a good player that way. He's responsible. He knows when he has to bear down. There's times in the game he'll get a little loose, like Marsh. We know that. The Bergie's there to bail him out a lot. And then we reel it in with them. So those are the asks of Pasta. And again, to go back to Hags's, you know, question, same thing. Like, hopefully – it comes around for him, knowing that he is getting the extra attention. Just have to, you know, find ways to get to the open ice a little easier.
Taylor Hall has been great for the Bruins, but Mike Riley has been just what the Bruins have needed. He is a solid puck-moving defenseman, reliable on the back end, and stepped in on the power play when Matt Grzelcyk was out. I talked with Riley about how he has fit in coming to the Bruins from Ottawa.
Hey, Mike, I just wanted to get your sense on how, you know, easy or perhaps not easy the transition has been to, you know, playing Bruins hockey, because it feels like you've fit in almost as though you've been there the entire time.
Yeah. Well, the first and foremost, I think the systems are a little bit different than kind of what I played, but you know, overall it's you know, the same teams kind of have the same mindset going in every game. And you know, obviously, right, when you look at this roster, there's some good speed on it and guys that can make plays, and I could feel like I, you know, compliment that pretty well. So I think that transition's pretty good in that sense. But yeah, just learning on the go here a little bit, and just asking questions and picking guys' brains about certain things. And you know, you can tell it's a really tight knit group in the room here, which is awesome. And whether you're a veteran guy, first year guy, it doesn't matter. Everyone kind of has a voice, and you know, you feel pretty comfortable.
Also want to ask you about your philosophy on puck handling and moving the puck, where a lot of times it seems like guys like to, you know, feel the puck on their stick, and that's not the case with you. You move it quick and you seem comfortable in doing so. Is that something that's always been the case with you? Because it seems like it's a big attribute for you at this point.
Yeah. You know, even in Ottawa a little bit, it was a lot of quick up hockey and you know, get the puck for the forwards, and you see the skill we got on this team here, and you know, if I see a, you know, it might be a line changer or something on the other end, and we got a guy maybe stretching it, you know, it could be a time to just get it up quick and catch him off guard, and you know, I know the way that works for me sometimes when you know, guys quick up it on you and it's quick transition, it's kind of hard to get back into position. So as much as I can, it's you know, if the play is there, that's great. And, you know, other times maybe slow it down once or twice to, you know, kind of regroup a little bit and come up as a five-man unit. But, yeah, the, you know, the quicker hockey and when the transition game is huge and often catch teams on their heels and create odd man rushes.
Craig Smith's been a huge part of the Bruins' second line that's been performing so well as of late. David Krejci and Taylor Hall. They've not been scored upon this year, and they have been solid, obviously, in the offensive zone as well. Here's Craig Smith.
What is your thoughts on seeding, you know, this year in the playoffs? Do you feel that pretty much any one of these top four teams is, you know, interchangeable and seeding's not going to matter all that much? And how does that kind of shift your focus perhaps going into these final handful of games?
Yeah, you just got to get in. You know, I think it's you know, I think this time of the year, you're everyone in the room is going to be doing the right things to play for the crest and make sure that we. You know, we're able to get in, and anything can happen when you get in. I don't know if home ice advantage is really going to be, you know, that big of a deal, with what's going on. So I think with, just worrying about getting the points and taking care of our own end and making sure our locker room is doing the right things is going to be key.
And why do you think this has worked so well for you this year? Butchie was describing you yesterday as definitely a top six guy, and he sees those top two lines as being pretty much in place moving forward. What has been what has really clicked for you with this group?
I don't know. I just want to chip in any way I can. I think coming into the year, that was kind of like my main focus is just relax, get to know the guys, and you know, just pull the rope any way I can and help out in any area. So really didn't have my mind set about where I'd be in the lineup. It was just wanted to be in with the group and you know, just, you know, chip in when I can and have some fun.
Bruce Cassidy's been mixing up the Bruins' third and fourth lines. Charlie Coyle has moved over to wing. Sean Corrali has been at center. Trent Frederick on their left, with Nick Ritchie moving down to the fourth line with Curtis Lazar and Chris Wagner. Talked with Corrali about the changes.
How much has this season, do you think, weighed collectively on, you know, the group from a mental and physical perspective, in that there has been fewer games, obviously, but there's been not a lot of recovery time? And, you know, not to make excuses on not getting to the hard places or not skating as hard as you guys demand of yourselves, but has it been, you know, physically and mentally cumbersome to get to that place from, you know, just being able to do it?
Yeah, that's a really fair question. I think it's definitely, you know, there's definitely been challenges. And throughout a normal year, you kind of see a reoccurrence of similar challenges, where this year has brought some new challenges that personally I haven't seen in my, you know, my time here yet, time in the NHL. You know, just the amount of games and, you know, I think mentally is definitely the biggest challenge. You know, less time socializing and more time, you know, being safe and you know, mostly staying at your place or in your room. But, yeah, it's been a challenge, but, I think that, like I said earlier, the game is kind of where you can find your joy, and still, 60 minutes between the whistles is all still the same. I think that's the most important part you try and tell yourself, but ton of new challenges, that you just try and face like you face anything else, I guess, and use the same, you know, same things to try and get through it.
Now to the Red Sox, where a big area of improvement has been what they have gotten from their third, fourth, and fifth starters in terms of attacking the strike zone. This was on display on Tuesday night as the Mets were defeated by the Red Sox, and Garrett Richards went seven strong innings on the hill. I talked with Alex Cora about that.
What does it mean for this club to have Richards, you know, throwing strikes the way that he did tonight in this type of performance, and how can that enhance, you know, what you guys want to be?
We like our pitching staff, and one of the things that we've been talking about, we've been walking a lot of people, right? But the last two games with Eddie and with Garrett, we attacked the strike zone. We got a lot of swing and misses, and there wasn't a lot of traffic out there. You know, this guy is really, really good. His stuff is that good. You know, when you talk to Christian and Kevin, you know, they wonder sometimes how he gets hit, because the ball moves all over the place. He has good breaking ball, good slider. But the fact that he made competitive pitches the whole night that's what it's all about. And I know he worked hard in between starts, and he's going to keep working hard, but he deserves this one. You know, he worked his, I mean, tail off the last 4 days to get to this point. At one point I was like, okay, six innings, that's good enough. But I was like, you know what? He should go seven with that stuff. And he did an outstanding job.
All right, Alex Cora right there. Red Sox at 17-10 atop the American League East. A very strong month of April to begin the 2021 season for the Red Sox. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks for having joined us for the Press Pass.